This is how it was reported. Venezuela's Juan Guaido declares final phase of operation to topple Maduro. Then came the news of an attempted coup. Even though Juan Guaido was on the streets with armed soldiers saying the moment is now, the coup has failed. This made the security advisor to Brazil president say, for example, that his impression is that Guaido has weak military support. Well, in this debate, we will look at exactly whether this was a coup or some calling it a U.S.-backed one, and whether Maduro has lost popular support enough for his presidency to be threatened. And what does the failure mean for Guaido? But before starting tonight's debate, let's take a look at the U.S. history of waging coups in Latin America.
On April 4, 2013, Nicolas Maduro was elected as the president of Venezuela after the death of long-serving leader Hugo Chavez. On February 18, 2014, protests against President Maduro led to the arrest of then-opposition leader Leopoldo López, who remains under house arrest. On March 29, 2017, Venezuelan Supreme Court said it was taking control of the National Assembly. The decision prompted months of protest. The Supreme Court reversed its decision. On May 20, 2018, President Maduro won a snap election. The two leading opposition candidates rejected the results, saying the election was marred by vote rigging. On January 5, 2019, the Venezuelan National Assembly designated Juan Guaido of the Voluntad Popular Party as its new president. On January 10, 2019, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro was sworn in for a second six-year term. On January 23, 2019, backed by the U.S. administration, Juan Guaido declared himself the president of Venezuela. Washington welcomed the move. On January 28, 2019, the U.S. administration imposed new financial sanctions on Venezuela. The measures chiefly targeted the banking sector. On February 3, 2019, thousands of protesters took to the streets of the capital Caracas in rival rallies. On March 29, 2019, Venezuela barred Juan Guaido from public office for 15 years. He was also stripped of his parliamentary immunity. On April 30, 2019, the Venezuelan government reported a small coup attempt.
For our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have senior analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, who joins us from New York. We also have host of Voice of the Revolution Radio, Jacob Music, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, welcome. Ian Williams, let me first start with you. We're looking at a situation where there was obviously a divergence of views when it came on this military support. Juan Guaido came out about an hour or so ago saying that there was a huge rupture that exists between the army and its loyalty to the government and Maduro. And just minutes after that tweet was made, you had the defense, the head of the defense army come out saying that, pledging its support for not only Venezuela, but also its president. So you have differing views there. And then, to put this into context for you, you have what John Bolton just came out minutes ago saying, in terms of the wires that we have, saying that it is very important for members of Maduro's government to make good on commitments to peaceful transition of power in Venezuela. It seems like somebody's not on the right page with what has gone down. Ian Williams.
Well, nobody's on the right page. Nobody's on the right page. For a start, the pages have been blank. I've been trying to follow events and much of the social media in Venezuela has been shut down, and even the newspaper and wire reports are way behind because presumably the government shut down the internet. So it is difficult to follow what's happening, and it's very difficult to gauge the degree of support. But the images I have seen of Venezuelan government armored trucks plowing into demonstrators do not really bespeak a great deal of support for Maduro. And the fact there are some military defectors, it could be a catalyst for others. You know, it's very difficult to tell. Once the military decide, especially all of the officers whom Maduro promoted to general and gave huge perks to, if they realize that if they think that they're going to be backing the wrong side, their loyalty will be highly questionable. And similarly, the troops aren't really, how should we say, in favor of shooting other Venezuelans. If they're ordered to shoot unarmed demonstrators, then you might get a lot more defections. But it's very difficult to say. And loaded words like coup, I mean, the timeline would just point out, the constitutionally elected National Assembly appointed Guaido as president. So yes, it's dubious about who actually has the roles of power, but it's pointless railing on about coups and counter-coups and illegitimacy and otherwise. In the end, the legitimacy comes from the people. And what we had there was a National Assembly that was elected, whose views were disregarded. We have opposition leaders who have been set aside, imprisoned, put under house arrest. We have newspapers that have been closed down. So Maduro can't seriously claim popular legitimacy, but the opposition has difficulty proving it as well. So really, a peaceful transition worked on by both sides would be the patriotic thing for them to do. And internationally supervised elections, perhaps. And that does not include John Bolton and Pompeo and the others, since I think everyone can agree that their intrusion into the Venezuelan situation is a recipe for total disaster.
Well, Jacob Music, let's look at what happened here today and then see basically the way that Guaido stands now. I mean, we're looking at what he said. He wanted the people to go out on the streets. He wanted the armed soldiers or soldiers to defect. He said that he's calling for both of them to join him. And he said the moment is now. He wanted an uprising to occur. And then when you take a look at the number of soldiers that he was pictured with, well, it was reported to be around 70, but then that number, well, it was contested to be roughly about 30. And you even have had the other officials from around the other countries say that Guaido does not have the support of the military. So this was kind of weak showing by him when he made that statement.
You quoted one official from Brazil who said that. Who has the support of the military will be difficult to tell.
This is for Jacob Music. I'm sorry, Ian Williams. I'll come to you. Sorry about that.
Really, it's a bit ironic for someone to...
I'm sorry. Jacob Music, go ahead. I'll come to you, Ian Williams. Go ahead.
Yeah, so yes. I really do agree with your other guest about what he said about the pages being blank. I think a lot of people are running around like chickens with their heads cut off when it comes to this. This is a really bad tragedy that the Bolivarian Republic has gotten to the point where it is. And I think that it needs to be said that calling for a military to rise up and overthrow the government is not necessarily the most democratic ways of doing it, but also it's probably not going to work. I mean, it is dubious to believe that one of the pillars of Maduro's power and the PSCV's power, and Chavez before that, the military would actually support some other opposition figure such as this. So it wasn't necessarily a show of absolute strength. I think that some part of the masses actually is willing to give their support to anybody who will promise to be able to fulfill their needs as the government has manifestly not been able to do so, and that is to only the PSCV's discredit. And now in the international arena, the United States is not helping. Other countries are not helping. Venezuela has no sponsor like socialist countries of the past had in the Soviet Union or the People's Republic of China. In many ways, Venezuela has been going it alone. But at the same time, it would be something different if we were saying the PSUV's policies were very strong. They definitely have the support of the masses, and they have a solid economic base built on something more than oil, which is only one more commodity. We cannot say those things for the PSCV. While the outside forces were not working for them and have birthed the situation that we are seeing today with disunity and disharmony and different people calling themselves the leaders, that would not have been possible if the PSCV had had a strong position and had competent leaders. So we cannot say that outside forces are helping the situation, nor the PSCV. I think to get to such a situation where there is such deprivation in a country like Venezuela, but also political disunity, both sides, if we are to say it that way, have made so many blunders along the way. And the people who have suffered the most have absolutely been the Venezuelan masses.
Ian Williams, I believe you had something to say. Go ahead.
Well, I would have said all of that as well. I mean, there is huge deprivation there, and it doesn't help the Venezuelans when people outside try to say this is this wonderful socialist country under U.S. military imperialist attack. This is an this has turned into an incompetent kleptocracy with an unpopular government, and we don't know that the opposition is more popular. But the polls that do come out show that Guaido has a lot of support and possibly a majority. The point is, this can't be tested.
What polls?
If you don't have elections, if you nullify the results of elections, if you invalidate candidates who oppose you. So in the meantime, it really is. These are blank pages we're waving around at each other. As for the military coup part, I think this keeps getting emphasized. But it's funny. I mean, Guaido, elected by the elected National Assembly, turns up with a pocket full of troops, and that's a military coup. And the Maduro sends armored cars and water cannon against armed demonstrators, and that's not a military coup. He's not relying on the military. Now, people don't think objectively about these things. This is clearly a situation in which the people have felt deprived of a voice, and sort of marshalling troops and armored cars against them isn't going to help the situation, certainly not going to win over their hearts and minds by running, as I've just seen, by running armored cars into crowds of unarmed demonstrators. That's not the way you win hearts and minds. That's Tiananmen. But we have to remember that in Tiananmen Square, the Chinese government was still in control afterwards. Whether that's the case here is another story. I think the real problem is that Venezuela might just become ungovernable. And here you have a country with huge amounts of arms and petrol and oil money coming in. That's a recipe for a really vicious Syrian, Iraqi style of long-term disaster.
Well, Jacob Music, in terms of popular support, our guest there, Ian Williams, said that according to polls, Guaido does have rather a large support base. Now, I recall very distinctly, I don't know if you... I just need to mention this. It was just not too long ago where the Venezuelan president called for this hands-off march. And also at the same time, Guaido called for his supporters to come out. We saw that the amount of people that came out supporting Maduro compared to the number of people that came out supporting Guaido. Well, obviously the Maduro supporters, I'm not saying there were a lot more, but there were more than the ones by the opposition. So we are looking at a country that is divided in some sense. But it's not like Guaido has overwhelming support based on what Ian Williams there said. Go ahead with what you wanted to say.
Indeed. In the United States, and especially in the media of Western countries that have supported Guaido, they would probably paint a situation that is more two-dimensional than the actual three-dimensional situation in the country of Venezuela. By looking at American media, you would probably think that everyone in Venezuela, pretty much except for the corrupt bureaucrats, support Guaido, and they just are begging for the freedom that Guaido can provide them, when the situation is actually a lot more complex. There's a lot of support for Guaido in the opposition, that's true, but there is a lot of support also for the PSUV and Maduro for their lasting legacy of what they were able to achieve in their golden age, which was a relatively short time and also relatively not that long ago. But they have definitely passed out of it. Now, they do have a lot of support still, but I think that what is probably most consequential is a third group of people who are rejecting the entire political establishment in Venezuela, whether it is the PSUV socialists or the opposition party People's Will. And they're saying that our entire, the bourgeoisie ruling class that may be represented in People's Will, the traditional landlords and landowners, the traditional politicians, as well as these new school socialist politicians and the bureaucrats of the government and the different political organs. They are saying all of those should be rejected because none of them have been able to meet our needs. And it's not like the opposition has not been involved in government. Like your other guest pointed out, they were able to have a majority in the National Assembly, and so they were able to contribute to the running of the polis as well. Both of these groupings have really done the Venezuelan masses wrong, and it's so sad because it just would have taken one of these parties, either the socialists, the opposition, or outside countries, if they were actually committed to the well-being of the Venezuelan people, it would have just taken just a few of these parties to agree with each other, try to work out some national salvation government, and the situation could have been much better. But instead, we have everyone working towards disunity, whether they realize it or not. And at the end of the day, the people who are suffering in Venezuela are the masses who ostensibly should have been, the Bolivarian government should have ostensibly been ruling on their behalf, and it has really let them down.
Well, Ian Williams, it's quite perplexing when you take a look at the way that the U.S. has been focused so much on Venezuela. I mean, we can go back to 2017, the then director Michael Pompeo of the CIA was actually stating outright that he is making plans for a change of governments in Venezuela. And he had made a trip to two of the countries in the region at that time. And we know there's been also a focus by the U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton on this. So this has been in the works for a while. What is the driving factor here that is pushing the U.S. to go after Venezuela in this case? Because we know also how they were focused somewhat on Iran. We know the pressure is on, but it seems like right now Venezuela is more urgent for them.
Look, I just first of all want to relish the irony of Pompeo and Bolton supporting Gallardo, whose party is in the Socialist International. It's not often you get a juxtaposition like this, whatever it means. But it's quite clear that they are obsessed
they
with it. They're obsessed with
that.
This effect in the vicinity. Venezuela hasn't been very good at exporting revolution. Its example isn't very good. So quite what their fears are. But remember, these were the people who thought the Nicaraguan Sandinistas were a sort of a bus ride away from Washington. We're talking about deep paranoid fears here, and these people have never got over the Cold War. They're deep in the Cold War still, in their mentality. And the Trump legislation,
yes,
the Trump administration, has brought these people from whichever pit they were rotting in, and deservedly rotting, and put them to the forefront. They're here with prejudices that don't reflect current reality. They were happily buying the oil from Venezuela until very recently, as long as it didn't threaten them. It was good.
Absolutely.
But now, of course, they've changed their mind, and it's not entirely rational what they're doing. Venezuela was no threat to them.
Okay, Jacob Music, the oil factor. We're looking at if you recall that interview that John Bolton had with Fox News recently, it was not that recent. When he talked about oil, he said the sanctions, that's when the U.S. Was placing these harsh sanctions. They include exceptions to allow the American oil company Chevron, as well as Halliburton, the oil service provider, once run by Dick Cheney, to continue working in Venezuela. He said that would be good. Mark Rubio also followed that up with a tweet that said a coup in Venezuela regime change would be beneficial to American workers and American oil companies. Is oil the driving factor here?
I think it's one of the driving factors in the downfall of the Bolivarian Republic, but also definitely one of the driving factors among these hawks who are circling what they see as a carcass. I mean, for sure, American industry would absolutely benefit from not only chaos in Venezuela, but having that market be opened, and perhaps for a prolonged period to break down the state monopoly. But also, we have to also admit on the other side that it is almost inexcusable with such oil reserves and such wealth that the PSUV and the ruling government establishment of the Bolivarian Republic could take what is such a gift of such a high and valuable natural resource. And for a while, they were able to strike this balance of funding their extensive welfare state and their reformist programs through the selling of oil. But eventually, a combination of sanctions, but also The falling price of oil showed the vulnerabilities of having an entire national economy based on one commodity. And so socialism in Venezuela should never have been built just on oil, because it will die by oil, as well as being born by oil and living by oil. And that is sort of the story that has made Venezuela so vulnerable to these ideologies that people like Bolton and Pompeo have, and made the masses, maybe some of them, want to go along and just say, well, whatever the U.S. is saying, or whatever the West is providing us or may provide us, has got to be better than what our government has provided us, because the government has shown itself to be manifestly unable to meet the needs of its citizens, even with large oil reserves and wealth.
The last question to you, Ian Williams. If this plan by the U.S. through Guaido, in terms of making sure an uprising happens, or a coup, whatever name you want to call it, does not happen, then what is next, and how far will the U.S. go? Do you think military intervention is going to definitely be something that they may pursue?
I hope and suspect the U.S. will not try to intervene militarily because it's not popular with the American public. I don't think they're up for yet another long war. Yeah. They might try to persuade the Brazilians and others to intervene, but whether that would be popular or effective. In general, you know, intervention is a last resort. The question is, how to let the Venezuelan people decide what pressures can be put on to make sure that both parties step aside and allow the Venezuelan people to speak. And, you know, as your other guest pointed out, there is a huge gap in Venezuela between the poor and the middle classes and upwards. A huge gap in aspirations, values, everything else. And I mean, it's not even just economic now. It's decades, centuries of resentment built up between them, which is what the Chavistas actually appealed to keep their regime in power, the sort of sans-culottes, as it were. That's got to be overcome. And it's very difficult to sit here. There's no easy prescription for it. And I hate to say it, but I mean, I think the most likely scenario is think Syria, think Iraq, think disintegrating government, losing control, fighting desperately and ruthlessly to keep control, people on the streets and breaking down. I really think that's a possibility. I don't like it, but it's a possibility.
Thank you for that. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you, Senior Analyst at Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams. And thank you, host, the voice of the Revolution Radio, Jacob Music. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale and the entire team of the Capitol, Tehran is goodbye.